This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We continue to look at the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. As the head of the World Food Program warns, northern Gaza is experiencing a full-blown famine, with severe starvation quickly spreading to the south due to Israel's war and total blockade of Gaza. World Food Program Executive Director Cindy McCain, the widow of the late Senator John McCain, spoke Sunday on NBC News Meet the Press.
There is famine, full-blown famine in the north, and it's moving its way south. And so with what we're asking for and what we've continually asked for is a ceasefire and the ability to have unfettered access to get in, safe and unfettered access to get into the into Gaza.
Human rights groups accuse Israel of using starvation as a weapon of war, a war crime. The Israeli military has repeatedly blocked the entry of vital aid into Gaza, attacked humanitarian aid convoys, and killed Palestinian civilians waiting to receive food and other aid. A Palestinian mother in Gaza City described the dire situation.
We need food to survive. We need to feed our children. We want to get to this area, but can't get there with cars because the roads are all blocked by rubble from the strikes. The sun hits us as we walk, and you find a long view there from the morning, and you're exhausted by the time you return, all for some bread.
For more, we go to Amman, Jordan, where we're joined by Dr. Waleed Massoud, a vascular surgeon, board member of Palestine Children's Relief Fund. He headed PCRF's medical mission to Gaza earlier this month. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Doctor. If you can start off by describing what we're seeing. I mean, to have Cindy McCain, the head of the World Food Program, saying the North is in full-blown famine. Describe the effects and what this means for the people who are surviving in Palestine, Gaza.
Good morning, first of all. Good morning, America. First of all, let me say about PCRF that our mission is to provide a medical and humanitarian relief for the children throughout the Levant, regardless their nationalities or religion. We headed to Gaza under the umbrella of PCRF and the umbrella of WHO. Okay, we had one lecture in the WHO in Cairo telling us about the safety measures, what we are going to meet in Rafah. Once we entered there, for the moment we entered there, we could see the children around us begging for food, begging for money, begging for anything, okay? The starvation, you could see it in everywhere in the hospital. We were based in the European hospital, and in the buildings of the hospitals, it was full of refugees. More than 50,000 refugees came from the north to this hospital because they feel it is safe. It's not only in the territory around the hospital, but inside the hotel, inside the corridors, in the stairs, every room, they had refugees. While we were walking in the corridors, you could see the children around, and you could see by their eyes how they are underfed, and they have malnutrition, and they are starving. You could see how they lost the muscle mass. You could see the skin. You could see how they fatigue. You could see how they are depressed, actually. Yani, when you talk to them, they are slow motion in talking. Okay, you can see the loss of the weight on these children. In the theaters, when we operate upon children, we could see how their body mass index is low. And we could see they are not oriented, actually, most of the patients upon we operated. This reflects this decrease the immunity of the children and increase the rate of the infection, because there is no enough proteins in their body to initiate or to make the immunity system in the right way. We had to operate immediately as emergency on many injured patients, not only children, but also adults. Starvation does not only with the children. It was everyone in the population. Imagine you have 1.8 million in Rafah, and there is no enough food for these. If there is a food, they cannot even reach it, because transportation is in dangerous. You could see how is the World Kitchen being bombed and killed there. What about the locals? If the foreigners died from bombarding their cars, what about the locals? You can imagine how 1.8 million, they don't have enough hospitals. Only three proper hospitals is working in Rafah. We operated in Rafah only, but some of our surgeons went to Al Kuwaiti Hospital because they could not transfer the kids to the European Hospital. One of our surgeons, pediatric surgeons, went to the Al Kuwaiti Hospital and performed 16 surgeries. Totally, we operated around 250 or 75 and more. Situation was very bad in the theater. The staff, if we talk about the staff are exhausted, staff depressed, staff disoriented. All the staff in the theaters and in the wards in the hospital, they are volunteers actually. They don't receive salaries. Do you know what they receive? They are volunteers working, no money, but they receive only the lunch. And this lunch, they eat a little bit, maybe they eat 10% of their lunch, in order to take the lunch to the tents, to their families, because they don't have money to buy anything. And if they have money, there is not enough food in the market. We operated upon children who been injured around 5-6 months ago. We had a patient, a 13 years old patient. I send you his video. He had shrapnels behind the knee, and he developed a fistula between the artery and the vein. So because of that, his foot and leg became ischemic, no enough blood, and it began a gangrene in his toes. So we did such an operation. This patient had a referral letter to go to Egypt for a treatment, but he could not because there is a queue. Maybe it will take him 10 months just to his chance to go to Egypt. We did the operation. We disconnected the fistula, and he is okay. But you could tell how his muscles are weak, and there is a loss of muscle bulk with him. His wounds, we followed him a few days after that. His wounds is not healing well because of the lack of proteins in his body, lack of minerals, lack of vitamins in his body. There is no enough food even in the hospital to give them IV fluids or IV nutrients. Many patients died from infection, because they don't have enough immunity, they don't have enough antibiotics or proper antibiotics, because sometimes they have the basics of the antibiotics. We managed to bring many medications, many antibiotics, other things, but it's not that enough. When a mission comes, they bring some, but it's not enough for 1.8 million people there in between. And there is, as you said earlier, above 78,000 injured and injured patients. Our mission was depressing to us from inside, but we were happy to give what we can do to them. There were many things which yani, disturbed us. We could work in an environment which is yani, unsuitable. Okay, example, these drones all the times have yani, noise voices like zzz. That's what they called it Zannani. First 3 days in our team, they could not sleep because of this drones and Zannani and this this noises. And it is 24 hours. There. We had the staff exhausted and depressed. When we came, we were 7 surgeons from Jordan and 1 nurse also from Jordan. We had 2 from Ireland. We have 1 from Germany and 1 from United States. All of them, we gathered them. We could not eat full food. Because we feel we are guilty once we are eating, and outside there is a lot of children begging for food, and families maybe they don't eat at all or they eat one time a day. Many surgeries were done, major surgeries, which needs that this patient has should have well feeding IV or something in order to his wounds to heal. We managed yani, to help patients, but in some situations it is out of our hands to continue. Okay, I managed, for example, to reoperate the lab cath, the cath lab, so we can do some surgeries with interventional radiology. This cath lab was out of work for more than 7 months. We managed to start working on this. We did many surgeries, and the patient discharged them home. This is another point. When we did surgery, patient went to discharge. The patient said, "Where I am going? I don't have any home. I don't have even tent to go." So many patients stay in the hospital so they can have a home, shelter, they can have food also. We managed also, they have dialysis machines, which is out of work for the last 7-8 months in the European hospital. We managed with the help of one of the biomedical engineers who came from Jordan, Dr. Smadi. We managed to fix up these 2 machines, and we reopened the dialysis unit there. We tried to bring some medicine, some instruments, some tools, equipment to be used for the patient there, but that was not enough.
Dr. Massoud, I'm going to interrupt here because we have to break.
Our mission not only was
I know that there is a delay.
We tried to support.
Dr. Massoud, there's a delay, but I just wanted to end by saying that we are seeing nonstop breaking news on Twitter now. For example, the New Yorker contributor Masab Abu Toha says the Israeli army is starting to blow up complete neighborhoods in East Rafah just 4 hours after ordering families to evacuate the area. And I wanted to end, we just have 30 seconds, because you work with Palestine Children's Relief, with your observation that increasingly children are expressing suicidal thoughts. We have 30 seconds.
Unfortunately, I had 2 patients, yani one patient and his sister. They were around 8 and 7 years. They were questioning me when I was in the round, why I am still alive, while my wife, my mother and father and the brothers died. The children there, they started to think about suicidal attempts. And we have another patient who lost their legs and they lost all the family. And she is bedridden and she tried to attempt suicide. Children, I cannot imagine how they will grow, these children in the future, while they were thinking about suicidal attempts because their family has died. Unfortunately, many children thinking about this. I cannot imagine in the future how they will act and how they will look to the world and to the peace. Imagine what's happening. Each family has lost many of their main supporter as father or mother. This creates a psychiatric situation with these children. I think as they need a surgeon to be there, they need a psychiatrist to in order to treat these patients. It is in need, definitely in need, because the increase of the, let us say, not suicide, because I did not see any suicidal attempts, but I heard from many children, they are thinking about suicide. Unfortunately, the help now is going through vascular surgeon, orthopedic surgeon, etc. I think we need to send more doctors there.
Dr. Waleed Massoud, we're going to have to leave it there as we go to the students who are protesting across the United States. I want to thank you so much for joining us from Amman, Jordan, just back from Gaza, vascular surgeon and board member of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. Coming up, the protests at University of Michigan graduation, at State University of New York, New Paltz, and more. Back in 20 seconds. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Graduation ceremonies have begun on college campuses across the United States as students continue their protests in solidarity with Palestine and calling on their schools to divest from Israel. On Friday, the student speaker at University of Toledo's graduate school commencement ceremony wore a keffiyeh hijab and a Palestinian flag over her graduation robe. This is part of the address by Maha Zaiden, a Palestinian-American graduating law student, president of the Graduate Student Association.
I apologize that this is not a typical graduation speech, but there is nothing typical about the times that we are living in. There is nothing typical about 15,000 children live-streamed deaths being watched. And there is nothing acceptable about our institutional complicity, silence, or the gross misuse of police force nationwide.
Maha Zaiden. Meanwhile, at the University of Michigan, students holding Palestinian flags briefly disrupted graduation ceremony Saturday as a plane flew overhead holding a banner that read, "Divest from Israel now, free Palestine." Also on Saturday at University of Virginia in Charlottesville, where in 2017 neo-Nazis chanted, "Jews will not replace us," police and riot gear stormed a Gaza solidarity encampment and arrested at least 25 student protesters. The raid came after The Intercept's Prem Thacker reported UVA, quote, appears to have unilaterally changed policy on tents to help justify calling upon the police to arrest protesters. Police have now arrested more than 2,500 students at pro-Palestine protests across the U.S. in the past 3 weeks, which includes 133 arrests on Thursday at SUNY New Paltz alone, where police violently raided a student encampment with batons and dogs. Well, we're joined by three guests from these schools. We're beginning in Southfield, Michigan, with Salma Hamami, a student at the University of Michigan who just graduated this past weekend. Salma's president of Students for Justice in Palestine chapter at the University of Michigan. Salma, can you describe the graduation ceremony on Saturday?
Hi. Yes, thank you for having me. So the graduation ceremony on Saturday took place in the early morning with nearly hundreds and hundreds of students prepared to enjoy a celebratory moment. However, likewise, there are hundreds of students who are in the process of immense grief given the ongoing genocide in Gaza and given the fact that the University of Michigan is funding a genocide. So took upon themselves to engage in protest at the ceremony, with nearly 100 students walking up and down the aisle, trying to rally for the university to heed our demands, considering that they have entirely ignored us for the last 7 months. As soon as the plane flew over with the banner, "Divest from Israel Now, Free Palestine," students jumped out of their seats carrying the Palestinian flag, walked throughout the aisles, and eventually the police pushed us towards the back and prevented further protesters from being able to join us in the graduation.
And the response of the overall crowd, I mean, there were tens of thousands of people there at University of Michigan graduation, Salma.
Yeah, there were certainly tens of thousands of people there. The stadium is one of the largest in the world. And as soon as the plane flew by with the banner calling for the university to divest, cheers erupted through the crowd as students stood up and held their Palestinian flags. You could likewise hear a mix of cheers and some fellow students nearby calling for the police to immediately arrest us, cursing us out, throwing racial slurs. However, students continued on and held the Palestinian flag very high up and joined very quickly with one another and only got louder as both the cheers and boos continued.
Very quickly, Salma, I'm curious. At the same time, you have a Gaza solidarity encampment on campus. Police have not been called in to raid that?
Yes. Surprisingly, police officers have not been called in to raid our encampment yet. We have faced quite a bit in regards to police brutality throughout the last 7 months. And as of right now, our best guess is due to the fact that every single time police suppression continues on the rise, students' power only grows in response. And so considering that the university would probably be very fearful of what would happen on campus if they were to engage in police violence again, witnessing what has happened in the past, students would only exemplify and amplify their solidarity. So it's more so a preventative cause. They're saying that they're trying to allow students to peacefully protest. However, every single time we have tried peacefully protesting in the past, demanding a meeting, they've arrested us several times, brutally beaten us to the floor, even ripping off students' hijabs in the process. So as of right now, the university, I think, is trying to wait it out and to wait for the students' energy to die down. However, it's only going to continue to grow.
Salma's joining us from Michigan. We're going now to Khadi de la Cruz, an undergraduate student at University of Virginia in Charlottesville, arrested Saturday for participating in the pro-Palestine encampment, a senior scheduled to graduate in 2 weeks. Now, let's place this again. This is Charlottesville, where in 2017, scores of white men, mainly men, marched saying Jews will not replace us. This is during the Trump administration. If you can describe the arrest that took place, Khadi, police arresting 25 protesters, what happened?
Hi, good morning. So as you noted, the tent policy changed without notice at 11 a.m. On Saturday, and at noon, they deployed state troopers in riot gear. We immediately linked arms. We knew why we were there. We knew we weren't going to leave until they met our demands, and we felt strong. They stalled for 2 hours. The state police, the city police, the county police, the university police were all there. At least 100 cops, and we danced, and a huge crowd gathered around the encampment. supporting us as police tried to keep them from getting in, but people kept running actually past the cops to join us. There was so much solidarity. The crowd outside was almost louder than us. Eventually, the state troopers in riot gear did close in on us, a line of at least 40 of them, just a little bit longer than us, with shields. We were able to hold our ground until they started to spray huge clouds of chemicals at close range. When we ran back into the encampment to flush out our eyes and our throats, it was when we were separated and on the ground that they started to beat me down with their shields, drag my body with my by my clothes, and they sprayed us at close range with the chemicals. I saw the can close to my face. I had a friend who they ripped her goggles off and sprayed her. They took us somewhere where they had no medics and no water while we screamed in pain. They detained 26 of us for almost 9 hours with the chemicals still burning on our skins. I'm banned from campus. They've given us no chance to get our belongings. I have no phone, no laptop, no wallet. I'm purely getting by on the generosity of my friends. And like you said, this is the same campus that knew that men with rifles, Nazis, white supremacists were coming and did not stop them. And none of those white supremacists are banned from campus.
Katie, you're supposed to graduate in 2 weeks?
Yes.
You're risking so much to have protested right before spending years getting your degree. Why did you do it?
We had spent so many months pushing for investment. We had had walkouts, like Salma was saying, like we had had walkouts. We had done so, so much. We had passed a referendum that got more votes in favor than even our entire student council election. And our administration refused to even comment on divestment. And even though I only have 2 weeks before I'm supposed to graduate, I actually started the encampment on my last day of classes and I ended up missing my classes. But even with 2 weeks left, I still, all of us there felt like we have more time on our hands left on our timeline than the people in Gaza as we're watching them bomb Rafah. We had a vigil the night before they raided our encampment. And we felt so much strength in our escalation. We knew why we were there. We linked arms. We felt strong. We danced in front of that riot gear. We would hold it down for anything.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us, Katie. And I want to now go to New York, to Ray Ferrara, who is with SUNY New Paltz at State University of New York at New Paltz at the Gaza Solidarity Encampment. Ray Ferrara, can you describe, I mean, you had a large number of students arrested, over 130?
The closest thing to an accurate number we have is 133. But it is most definitely more than that. That's the number that the DA is giving. But just our jail support resources have made it even more than that. We had about that many people at the encampment.
And very quickly, since we only have about 40 seconds, can you describe what happened? You had just put the encampment, police moved in?
No, we set up our encampment on 1 p.m. on Wednesday. And it wasn't until about 10:40 p.m. on Thursday that the police raided us. This is after several failed attempts to negotiate with the university. Police raided us for over 3 hours. They knocked my friend unconscious. He now has a concussion. They knocked an 82-year-old woman unconscious. All of my friends have bruises. They have red marks on their hands from the zip ties. And then afterwards, they bulldozed all of our things.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Ray Ferrara, SUNY New Paltz Gaza Solidarity Camp participant and student at SUNY New Paltz, Katie de la Cruz, speaking to us from the University of Virginia, and Salma Hamami at the University of Michigan, just graduated president of SJP. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.